as if he could no longer distinguish between the two. "What's wrong is that those pieces of shit got into my house and attacked my mate. What's wrong is that my own damned wards worked against me, and you had to make a bargain with that thing to keep yourself from being taken. What's wrong?" "Calm down," I said quietly, but not weakly. His eyes glowed, like lightning had struck an ocean. But he inhaled deeply, blowing out the breath through his nose, and his shoulders loosened, barely. "Did you see what it was? That thing down there?"
"I guessed enough about it to close my eyes," he said. "I only opened them when it had stepped away from their bodies."
Cassian's skin had turned ashen. He'd seen it. He'd seen it again. But he said nothing. "Yes, the king got past our defenses," I said to Reese.
"Yes, things went badly. But we weren't hurt. And the ravens revealed some key pieces of information."
Sloppy, I realized. Reese had been sloppy in killing them. Normally he would have kept them alive for Azrael to question, but he'd taken what he needed, quickly and brutally, and ended it. He'd shown more restraint about the Adar.
"We know why the cauldron doesn't work at its full strength now," I went on. "We know that Nesta is more of a priority for the king than I am."
Reese mulled it over.
"Hybern showed part of his hand in bringing them here. He has to have a sliver of doubt of his conquest if he'd risk it."
Nesta looked like she was going to be sick. Cassian wordlessly refilled her glass, but I asked, "How? How did you know that we were in trouble?"
"Clotho," Reese said. "There's a spelled bell inside the library. She rang it, and it went out to all of us. Cassian got there first."
I wondered what had happened in those initial moments, when he'd found my sister. As if he'd read my thoughts, Reese sent the image to me, no doubt courtesy of Cassian. Panic and rage. That was all he knew as he shot down into the heart of the pit, spearing for that ancient darkness that had once shaken him to his very marrow.
Nesta was there. And Feyre.
It was the former he saw first, stumbling out of the dark, wide-eyed, her fear a tang that whetted his rage into something so sharp he could barely think, barely breathe. She let out a small animal sound, like some wounded stag, as she saw him. As he landed so hard, his knees popped. He said nothing as Nesta launched herself toward him, her dress filthy and disheveled, her arms stretching for him. He opened his own for her, unable to stop his approach, his reaching. She gripped his leathers instead.
"Feyre,"
she rasped, pointing behind her with a free hand, shaking him solidly with the other. Strength. Such untapped strength in that slim, beautiful body.
"Hybern."
That was all he needed to hear. He drew his sword. Then Reese was arrowing for them, his power like a god's damned volcanic eruption. Cassian charged ahead into the gloom, following the screaming. I pulled away, not wanting to see further. See what Cassian had witnessed down there. Reese strode to me and lifted a hand to brush my hair, but stopped upon seeing the blood crusting his fingers. He instead studied the tattoo now marring my left arm.
"As long as we don't have to invite it to solstice dinner, I can live with it."
"You can live with it?" I lifted my brows. A ghost of a smile, even with all that had happened, that now lay before us.
"At least now if one of you misbehaves, I know the perfect punishment. Going down there to talk to that thing for an hour."
Nesta scowled with distaste, but Cassian let out a dark laugh.
"I'll take scrubbing toilets, thank you. Your second encounter seemed less harrowing than the first. It wasn't trying to eat me this time."
But the shadows still darkened his eyes. Reese saw them too. Saw them and said quietly, again with that High Lord's voice. Warn whoever needs to know to stay indoors tonight. Children off the streets at sundown. None of the palaces will remain open past moonrise. Anyone on the streets faces the consequences.
Of what? I asked, the liquor in my stomach now burning.
Rhys's jaw tightened, and he surveyed the sparkling city beyond the windows. Of Amryn on the hunt. Elaine was nestled beside a too casual Moor on the sitting room couch when we arrived at the townhouse. Nesta strode past me right to Elaine, and took up a seat on her other side, before turning her attention to where we remained in the foyer. Waiting. Somehow sensing the meeting that was about to unfold. Lucian, stationed by the front window, turned from watching the street, monitoring it. A sword and dagger hung from his belt. No humor, no warmth, grazed his face, only fierce, grim determination.
Azrael's coming down from the roof,
Rhys said to none of us in particular, leaning against the archway into the sitting room and crossing his arms. And as if he'd summoned him, Azrael stepped out of a pocket of shadow by the stairs and scanned us from head to toe. His eyes lingered on the blood crusting Rhys's hands. I took up a spot at the opposite doorway post, while Cassian and Azrael remained between us. Rhys was quiet for a moment before he said,
"The priestesses will keep silent about what happened today, and the people of this city won't learn why Amryn is now preparing to hunt. We can't afford to let the other High Lords know. It would unnerve them, and destabilize the image we have worked so hard to create."
"The attack on Velaris," Moor countered from her place on the couch, "already showed we're vulnerable."
"That was a surprise attack, which we handled quickly,"
Cassian said, siphons flickering.
"As made sure the information came out portraying us as victors, able to defeat any challenge Hybern throws our way."
"We did that today," I said.
"It's different," Rhys said. "The first time we had the element of their surprise to excuse us. This second time. It makes us look unprepared. Vulnerable. We can't risk that getting out before the meeting in 10 days. So for all appearances, we will remain unruffled as we prepare for war."
Moor sagged against the couch cushions. "A war where we have no allies beyond Kyr, either in Prithian or beyond it." Rhys gave her a sharp look, but Elaine said quietly, "The Queen might come." Silence. Elaine was staring at the unlit fireplace, eyes lost to that vague murkiness. "What queen?" Nesta said, more tightly than she usually spoke to her sister.
"The one who was cursed?"
"Cursed by the cauldron," I clarified to Nesta, pushing off the archway. "When it threw its tantrum after you... left."
"No."
Elaine studied me, then her.
"Not that one. The other."
Nesta took a steadying breath, opening her mouth to either whisk Elaine upstairs or move on. But Azrael asked softly, taking a single step over the threshold and into the sitting room,
"What other?"
Elaine's brows twitched toward each other.
"The queen, with the feathers of flame."
The shadow singer angled his head. Lucian murmured to me, eye still fixed on Elaine.
"Should we? Does she need?"
"She doesn't need anything," Azrael answered without so much as looking at Lucian. Elaine was staring at the spymaster now, unblinkingly.
"We're the ones who need..."
Azrael trailed off.
"A seer,"
he said more to himself than us.
"The cauldron made you a seer."
Chapter 33 Seer. The word clanged through me, She'd known. She'd warned Nesta about the ravens. And in the chaos of the attack, that little realization had slipped from me. Slipped from me as reality and dream slipped and entwined for Elaine. Seer. Elaine turned to Moore, who was now gaping at my sister from her spot beside her on the couch. Is that what this is? And the words, the tone, they were so normal-sounding that my chest tightened. Moore's gaze darted across my sister's face as if weighing the words, the question, the truth or lie within. Moore at last blinked, mouth parting, like that magic of hers had at last solved some puzzle. Slowly, clearly, she nodded. Lucian silently slid into one of the chairs, before the window, that metal eye whirring as it roved over my sister. It made sense, I supposed, that Asriel alone had listened to her. The male who had heard things others could not. Perhaps he too had suffered, as Elaine had before he understood what gift he possessed. He asked Elaine, "There is another queen?" Elaine squinted, as if the question required some inner clarification, some path into looking the right way at whatever had addled and plagued her. "Yes." "The sixth queen," Moore breathed. "The queen who the Golden One said wasn't ill." "She said not to trust the other queens because of it," I added. And as soon as the words left my mouth, it was like stepping back from a painting to see the entire picture. Up close, the words had been muddled and messy, but from a distance. "You stole from the cauldron," I said to Nesta, who seemed ready to jump between all of us and Elaine. "But what if the cauldron gave something to Elaine?" Nesta's face drained of color. "What?" Equally ashen, Lucian seemed inclined to echo Nesta's hoarse question, but Asriel nodded. "You knew," he said to Elaine, "about the young queen turning into a crone." Elaine blinked and blinked, eyes clearing again, as if the understanding, our understanding, it freed her from whatever murky realm she'd been in. "The sixth queen is alive?" Asriel asked, calm and steady, the voice of the High Lord's spymaster, who had broken enemies and charmed allies. Elaine cocked her head, as if listening to some inner voice. "Yes." Lucian just stared and stared at my sister, as if he'd never seen her before. I whipped my face to Rhys. "A potential ally?" "I don't know," he answered. "If the others cursed her." "What sort of curse?" my mate asked, before he'd even finished speaking to me. Elaine shifted her face toward him, another blink. "They sold her to some darkness, to some sorcerer lord." She shook her head. "I can never see him, what he is. There is an onyx box that he possesses, more vital than anything, save for them, the girls. He keeps other girls, others so like her, but she, by day she is one form, by night, human again." "A bird of burning feathers," I said. "Firebird by day," Rhys mused. "Woman by night. So she's held captive by this sorcerer lord?" Elaine shook her head. "I don't know. I hear her screaming. With rage, utter rage." She shuddered. Moore leaned forward. "Do you know why the other queens cursed her? Sold her to him?" Elaine studied the table. "No. No, that is all mist and shadow." Rhys blew out a breath.
"Can you sense where she is?"
"There is a lake deep in the continent, I think,"
hidden amongst mountains and ancient forests. Elaine's throat bobbed. He keeps them all at the lake.
Other women like her?
Yes, and no. Their feathers are white as snow. They glide across the water, while she rages through the skies above it. Moore said to Rhys, "What information do we have on this sixth queen?"
"Little," Asriel answered for him. "We know little. Young, somewhere in her mid-twenties. Scythia lies along the wall to the east. It's smallest amongst the human queen's realms, but rich in trade and arms. She goes by Vassa, but I never got a report with her full name."
Rhys considered.
"She must have posed a considerable threat to the queens if they turned on her. And considering their agenda..."
"If we can find Vassa," I cut in, "she could be vital in convincing the human forces to fight, and giving us an ally on the continent."
"If we can find her,"
Cassian countered, stepping up to Asriel's side, his wings flaring slightly.
"It could take months. Not to mention facing the male who holds her captive could be harder than expected. We can't afford all those potential risks, or the time it'd take. We should focus on this meeting with the other High Lords first."
"But we could stand to gain much," Moore said. "Perhaps she has an army."
"Perhaps she does," Cassian cut her off. "But if she's cursed, who will lead it? And if her kingdom is so far away, they have to travel the mortal way, too. You remember how slowly they moved, how quickly they died?"
"It's worth a try," Moore sniped.
"You're needed here," Cassian said.
Asriel looked inclined to agree, even as he kept quiet.
"I need you on a battlefield, not traipsing through the continent, the human half of it. If those queens have rallied armies to offer Highburn, they're no doubt standing between you and Queen Vassa."
"You don't give me orders."
"No, but I do," Rhys said. "Don't give me that look. He's right. We need you here, Moore."
"Scythia," Moore said, shaking her head. "I remember them. They're horse people. A mounted cavalry could travel far faster."
"No."
Sheer will blazed in Rhys's eyes. The order was final. But Moore tried again. "There is a reason why Elaine is seeing these things. She was right about the other queen turning old. About the raven's attack. Why is she being sent this image? Why is she hearing this queen? It must be vital. If we ignore it, perhaps we'll deserve to fail."
Silence.
I surveyed them all. Vital. Each of them was vital here. But me. I sucked in a breath. "I'll go." Lucian was staring at Elaine as he spoke. We all looked at him. Lucian shifted his focus to Rhys, to me.
"I'll go," he repeated, rising to his feet. "To find this sixth queen." Moore opened and shut her mouth.
"What makes you think you could find her?"
Rhys asked. Not rudely, but from a commander's perspective. Sizing up the skills Lucian offered against the risks, the potential benefits.
"This eye,"
Lucian gestured to the metal contraption. "It can see things that others can't. Spells. Glamours. Perhaps it can help me find her, and break her curse." He glanced at Elaine, who was again studying her lap.
"I'm not needed here. I'll fight if you need me to, but..."
He offered me a grim smile.
"I do not belong in the Autumn Court, and I'm willing to bet I'm no longer welcomed at the Spring Court."
Home, he had almost said.
"But I cannot sit here and do nothing. Those queens with their armies. There is a threat in that regard, too. So use me. Send me. I will find Vassa. See if she can bring help."
"You will be going into the human territory,"
Rhys warned.
I can't spare a force to guard you. I don't need one. I travel faster on my own.
His chin lifted.
I will find her. And if there's an army to bring back, or at least some way for her own story to sway the human forces, I'll find a way to do that too.
My friends glanced to each other. Moore said, It will be very dangerous.
A half-smile curved Lucian's mouth.
Good. It'd be boring otherwise.
Only Cassian returned the grin.
I'll load you up with some Illyrian steel.
Elaine now watched Lucian warily, blinking every now and then. She revealed no hint of whatever she might be seeing, sensing. None.
Rhys pushed off the archway. I'll winnow you as close as we can get, to wherever you need to begin your hunt.
Lucian had indeed been studying all those maps lately. Perhaps at the quiet behest of whatever force had guided us all. My mate added,
Thank you.
Lucian shrugged. And it was that gesture alone that made me say at last, Are you sure? He only glanced at Elaine, whose face was again a calm void while she traced a finger over the embroidery on the couch cushions.
Yes. Let me help, in whatever way I can.
Even Nesta seemed relatively concerned. Not for him, no doubt, but the fact that if he were hurt or killed, what would it do to Elaine? The severing of the mating bond. I shut out the thought of what it'd do to me. I asked Lucian, When do you want to leave?
Tomorrow.
I hadn't heard him sound so assertive in a long time.
I'll prepare for the rest of today, and leave after breakfast tomorrow morning.
He added to Rhys,
If that works for you.
My mate waved an idle hand.
For what you're about to do, Lucian, we'll make it work.
Silence fell once more. If he could find that missing queen, and perhaps bring back some sort of human army, or at least sway the mortal forces from Hybern's thrall, if I could find a way to get the Carver to fight for us that didn't involve using that terrible mirror, would it be enough? The meeting with the High Lords, it seemed, would decide that. Rhys jerked his chin at Asriel, who took it as an order to vanish, to no doubt check in on Amryn.
Find out if Kyr and his Darkbringers had any attacks.
My mate ordered Moore and Cassian, who nodded and left as well. Alone with my sisters and Lucian, Rhys and I caught Nesta's eye. And for once, my sister rose to her feet and came toward us, the three of us not so subtly heading upstairs, leaving Lucian and Elaine alone. It was an effort not to linger atop the landing, to listen to what was said, if anything was said at all. But I made myself take Rhys's hand, flinching at the blood still caked on his skin, and led him to our bathing room. Nesta's bedroom door clicked shut down the hall. Rhys wordlessly watched me as I turned on the bathtub faucet and grabbed a washcloth from the chest against the wall. I took up a seat at the edge of the tub, testing the water temperature against my wrist and patted the porcelain rim beside me. Sit. He obeyed, his head drooping as he sat. I took one of his hands, guided it to the gurgling stream of water, and held it beneath. Red flowed off his skin, eddying in the water beneath. I plucked up the cloth and scrubbed gently, more blood flaking off, water splashing into the still immaculate sleeves of his jacket. Why not shield your hands?
I wanted to feel it. Your lives ending beneath my fingers.
Cold, flat words. I scrubbed at his nails, the blood wedged into the cracks where it met his skin, the arcs beneath. Why is it different this time? Different from the Adder's ambush, Hybern's attack in the woods, the attack on Valaris, all of it. I'd seen him in a rage before, but never so detached.
as if morality and kindness were things that lurked on a surface far, far above the frozen depths he'd plunged into. I turned his palm into the spray, getting at the space between his fingers.
"What is the point of it?" he said. "Of all this power, if I can't protect those who are most vulnerable in my city, if it can't detect an incoming attack."
Even Azrael didn't learn of it.
The king used an archaic spell and walked in the front door. If I can't...
Rhys shook his head, and I lowered his now clean hand and reached for the other. More blood stained the water.
If I can't protect them here... How can...
His throat bobbed. I lifted his chin with a hand. Icy rage had slipped into something a bit shattered and aching.
Those priestesses have endured enough. I failed them today. That library? It will no longer feel safe for them. The one place they've had to themselves, where they knew they were protected. Highburn took that away today.
And from him. He'd gone to that library for his own need for healing, for safety. He said,
"Perhaps it's punishment for taking away Valaris from Moor, and granting Kyr access here."
"You can't think like that. It won't end well." I finished washing his other hand, rinsed the cloth, then began swiping it along his neck, his temples. Soothing, warm presses. Not to clean, but to relax.
"I'm not angry about the bargain," he said, closing his eyes as I swiped the cloth over his brow. "In case you were worried."
I wasn't. Rhys opened his eyes, as if he could hear the smile in my voice, and studied me while I chucked the cloth into the tub with a wet slap and turned off the faucet. He was still studying me when I took his face in my damp hands.
"What happened today was not your fault," I said, the words filling the sun-drenched bathing room.
"None of it. It all lies on Highburn. And when we face the king again, we will remember these attacks, these injuries to our people. We forgot Amarantha's spellbook, to our own loss, but we have a book of our own, hopefully with the spell we need, and for now, we will prepare, and we will face the consequences. For now, we move ahead."
He turned his head to kiss my palm. "Remind me to give you a salary raise."
I choked on a cough.
"For what?"
"For the Sage Council. And the other vital services you provide me."
He winked. I laughed in earnest and squeezed his face as I pressed a swift kiss to his mouth.
"Shameless flirt."
The warmth returned to his eyes at last. So I reached for an ivory towel and bundled his hands, now clean and warm, into the folds of soft fabric. Chapter 34 Amryn found no other Highburn assassins or spies during her long night of hunting through Valaris. How she sought them, how she distinguished friend from foe. Some people, Moore told me the next morning, after we all had a sleepless night, painted their thresholds in lamb's blood, a sort of offering to her, and payment to stay away. Some left cups of it on their doorsteps. As if everyone in the city knew that the High Lord Second, that small, boned female, she was the monster that defended them from the other horrors of the world. Rhys had spent much of the previous day and night reassuring the priestesses of their safety, walking them through the new wards. The priestess who had let him in, for whatever reason, Highburn had left her alive. She allowed Rhys into her mind to see what had happened. Once the king had sundered the wards with that fleeting spell, his ravens had appeared as two old scholars to get the priestess to open the door, then forced their way into her mind
so that she'd welcome them in without being vetted. The violation of that alone. Rhys had spent hours with those priestesses yesterday. More, too. Talking, listening to the ones who could speak, holding the hands of the ones who couldn't. And when they at last left, there was a peace between my mate and his cousin. Some lingering, jagged edge that had somehow been soothed. We didn't have long. I knew that. Felt it with every breath. Highburn wasn't coming. Highburn was here. Our meeting with the High Lords was now over a week away, and still Nesta refused to join us. But it was fine. We'd manage. I'd manage. We didn't have another choice. Which was why I found myself standing in the foyer the next morning, watching Lucian shoulder his heavy pack. He wore Illyrian leathers under a heavier jacket, along with layers of clothes beneath to help him survive in varying climates. He'd braided back his red hair, the length of it snaking across his back, right in front of the Illyrian sword strapped down his spine. Cassian had given him free rein yesterday afternoon to loot his personal cachet of weapons, though my friend had been economical about which ones he'd selected. The blade, plus a short sword, plus an assortment of daggers. A quiver of arrows and an unstrung bow were tied to his pack. "You know precisely where you want Rhys to take you?" I asked at last. Lucian nodded, glancing to where my mate now waited by the front door. He'd bring Lucian to the edge of the human continent, to wherever Lucian had decided would be the best landing spot. No farther, Asriel had insisted. His reports indicated it was too watched, too dangerous, even for one of our own. Even for the most powerful High Lord in history. I stepped forward, and didn't give Lucian time to step back as I hugged him tightly. "Thank you," I said, trying not to think about all the steel on him, if he'd need to use it. "It was time," Lucian said quietly, giving me a squeeze, "for me to do something." I pulled away, surveying his scarred face. "Thank you," I said again. It was all I could think of to say. Rhys extended a hand to Lucian. Lucian studied it, then my mate's face. I could nearly see all the hateful words they'd spoken, dangling between them, between that outstretched hand and Lucian's own. But Lucian took Rhys's hand, that silent offer of not only transportation. Before that dark wind swept in, Lucian looked back. Not to me, I realized, to someone behind me. Pale and thin, Elaine stood atop the stairs. Their gazes locked and held, but Elaine said nothing, did not so much as take one step downward. Lucian inclined his head in a bow, the movement hiding the gleam in his eye, the longing and sadness. And when Lucian turned to signal to Rhys to go, he did not glance back at Elaine. Did not see the half-step she took toward the stairs, as if she'd speak to him, stop him. Then Rhys was gone, and Lucian with him. When I turned to offer Elaine breakfast, she'd already walked away. I waited in the foyer for Rhys to return. In the dining room to my left, Nesta silently practiced building those invisible walls in her mind. No sign of Amryn since her hunt last night. When I asked if she was making any progress, my sister only said, "Amryn thinks I'm getting close enough to begin trying on something tangible." And that was that. I left her to it, not bothering to ask if Amryn had also come close to figuring out some sort of spell in the book to repair that wall. In silence, I counted the minutes one by one. Then, a familiar dark wind swirled through the foyer. And I loosed a too-tight breath as Rhys appeared in the middle of the hall carpet. No indication of any sort of trouble. No sign of hurt or harm. But I slid my arms around his waist, needing to feel him, smell him. "Did everything go well?" Rhys brushed a kiss to the top of my head. "As well as can be expected. He's now on the continent, heading eastward." He marked Nesta studying at the dining table. How's our new seer holding up? I pulled back to explain that I'd left Elaine to her own thoughts, but Nesta said, "Don't call her that." Rhys gave me an incredulous look, but Nesta just went back to flipping through a book, her face going vacant, while she practiced with whatever wall-building exercises Amryn had ordered. I poked him in the ribs. "Don't provoke her." A corner of his mouth lifted, the expression full of wicked delight. "Can I provoke you instead?" I clamped my lips to keep from smiling. The front door blew open and Amryn stormed in. Rhys was instantly facing her.
"What?"
Gone was the slick amusement, the relaxed posture. Amryn's pale face remained calm, but her eyes, they swirled with rage.
"Highburn has attacked the summer court. They lay siege to Adriata as we speak."
Chapter 35. Highburn had made its grand move at last, and we had not anticipated it. I knew Azriel would take the blame upon himself. One look at the Shadow Singer as he prowled through the front door of the townhouse minutes later, Cassian on his heels, told me that he already did. We stood in the foyer, Nesta lingering at the dining table behind me.
"Has Tarquin called for aid?"
Cassian asked Amryn.
None of us dared question how she knew. Amryn's jaw tightened.
"I don't know. I got the message and nothing else."
Cassian nodded once and turned to Rhys.
"Did the Summer Court have a mobile fighting force readied when you were there?"
"No,"
Rhys said.
"His armada was scattered along the coast."
A glance at Azriel.
"Half is in Adriata. The other dispersed," the Shadow Singer supplied. "His terrestrial army was moved to the Spring Court border, after Feyre. The closest legion is perhaps 3 days' march away. Very few can winnow." "How many ships?"
Rhys asked.
20 in Adriata, fully armed."
A calculating look at Amryn.
"Numbers on Highburn?"
"I don't know, many. I think they are overwhelmed."
"What was the exact message?"
Pure, unrelenting command laced every word. Amryn's eyes glittered like fresh silver. "It was a warning from Varian to prepare our own defenses." Utter silence.
"Prince Varian sent you a warning?"
Cassian asked a bit quietly. Amryn glared at him.
"It is a thing that friends do."
More silence. I met Rhys's stare, sensed the weight and dread and anger simmering behind the cool features.
"We cannot leave Tarquin to face them alone," I said. "Perhaps Highburn had sent the ravens yesterday to distract us from looking beyond our own borders, to have our focus on Highburn, not our own shores." Rhys's attention cut to Cassian.
"Kier and his Darkbringer army are nowhere near ready to march. How soon can the Illyrian legions fly?"
Rhys immediately winnowed Cassian into the war camps to give the orders himself. Azriel had vanished with them, going ahead to scout Adriata, taking his most trusted spies with him.
Nausea had churned in my gut as Cassian and Azriel tapped the siphons atop their hands, and that scaled armor unfurled across their body. As 7 siphons appeared on each, as the Shadow Singer's scarred hands checked the buckles on his knife belts and his quiver, while Rhys summoned extra Illyrian blades for Cassian, 2 at his back, 1 at each side. Then they were gone, stone-faced and steady, ready for bloodshed. More arrived moments later, heavily armed, her hair braided back and every inch of her thrumming with impatience. But More and I waited for the order to go, to join them. Cassian had positioned the Illyrian legions closer to the southern border the weeks I'd been away. But even so, they wouldn't be able to fly without a few hours of preparation. and it would require Rhys to winnow them in. All of them.
To Adriata.
Will you fight?
Nesta was now standing a few steps up the staircase at the townhouse, watching as Moore and I readied.
Soon. Azriel or Rhys would contact us soon with the all-clear to winnow to Adriata.
We'll fight if it's required, I said, checking once more that the belt of knives was secure at my hips. Moore wore Illyrian leathers as well, but the blades on her were different. Slimmer, lighter, some of their tips slightly curved, like lightning given flesh. Seraphim blades, she told me, gifted to her by Prince Draken himself during the war.
What do you know of battle?
I couldn't tell if my sister's tone was insulting or merely inquisitive.
We know plenty, Moore said tightly, arranging her long braid between the blades crossed over her back.
Elaine and Nesta would remain here, with Amryn watching over them, and watching over Velaris, along with a small legion of Illyrians Cassian had ordered to camp in the mountains above the city.
Moore had passed Amryn on her way in, the small female apparently heading to the butcher to fill up on provisions before she'd return to stay here, for however long we'd be in Adriata, if we returned at all.
I met Nesta's gaze again. Only wary distance greeted me. We'll send word when we can. A rumble of midnight thunder brushed against the walls of my mind. A silent signal, speared over land and mountains, as if Rhys's concentration was now wholly focused elsewhere, and he did not dare break it. My heart stumbled a beat. I gripped Moore's arm, the leather scales cutting into my palm. They've arrived. Let's go. Moore turned to my sister, and I had never seen her seem so warrior-like. I'd known it lurked beneath the surface, but here was the Morrigan, the female who had fought in the war, who knew how to end lives with blade and magic. It's nothing we can't handle, Moore said to Nesta with a cocky smile, and then we were gone. Black wind roared and tore at me, and I clung to Moore as she winnowed us through the courts, her breath a ragged beat in my ear. Then blinding light, and suffocating heat, and screams, and thunderous booming, and metal on metal. I swayed, bracing my feet apart as I blinked, as I took in my surroundings. Rhys and the Illyrians had already joined the fray.
Moore had winnowed us to the barren top of one of the hills flanking the half-moon bay of Adriata, offering perfect views of the island city in its center and the city on the mainland below.
The waters of the bay were red. Smoke rose in gnarled black columns from buildings and foundering ships. People screamed. Soldiers shouted. So many. I had not anticipated the scope of how many soldiers there would be, on either side. I'd thought it would be neat lines, not chaos everywhere. Not Illyrians in the skies above the city and the harbor blasting their power and arrows into the Hybern army that rained hell upon the city. Ship after ship squatted toward the horizon, hemming either entrance to the bay. And in the bay. Those are Tarquin's ships, Moore said. Her face taut as she pointed to the white sails colliding with terrible force against the gray sails of Hybern's fleet. Utterly outnumbered, and yet plumes of magic, water and wind and whips of vines kept attacking any boat that neared. And those that broke through the magic faced soldiers armed with spears and bows and swords. And ahead of them, pushing against the fleet, the Illyrian lines. So many. Rhys had winnowed them in, all of them. The drain on his power. Moore's throat bobbed. No one else has come, she murmured. No other courts. No sign of Tamlin and the Spring Court on Hybern's side either. A thunderous boom of dark power blasted into Hybern's fleet, scattering ships, but not many. As if Rhys's power is either already nearly spent or... They've got something working against it, I said. More of that Feybane? Highburn would be stupid not to use it.
Her fingers curled and uncurled at her sides, sweat beaded on her temple.
More?
I knew it was coming, she murmured.
Another war at some point. I knew battles would come for this war, but I forgot how terrible it is. The sounds. The smells.
Indeed, even from the rocky outcropping so high above, it was overwhelming. The tang of blood, the pleading and screaming. Getting into the midst of it. Alice.
Alice had left the Spring Court, fearing the hell I'd unleash there, only to come here. To this.
I prayed she was not in the city proper. Prayed she and her nephews were keeping safe.
We're to go to the palace, Moore said, squaring her shoulders. I hadn't dared break Rhysand's concentration by opening up a channel in the bond, but it seemed he was still capable of giving orders. Soldiers have reached its northern side, and their defenses are surrounded. I nodded once, and Moore drew her slender, curving blade. It gleamed as brightly as Amryn's eyes, that seraphim steel. I unsheathed my Illyrian blade from across my back, the metal dark and ancient by comparison to the living silver flame in her hand.
We stick close. You don't get out of sight, Moore said smoothly and precisely. We don't go down a hall or stairwell without assessing first.
I nodded again, at a loss for words. My heart beat at a gallop. My palms turned sweaty. Water. I wished I'd had some water. My mouth had gone bone dry.
If you can't bring yourself to make the kill, she added, without a hint of judgment, then shield me from behind.
I can do it. The killing, I rasped. I'd done plenty of it that day in Valaris. Moore assessed the grip I maintained on my blade, the set of my shoulders.
Don't stop and don't linger. We press forward until I say we retreat. Leave the wounded to the healers.
None of them enjoyed this, I realized. My friends, they had gone to war and back and had not found it worthy of glorification, had not let its memory become rose-tinted in the centuries following. But they were willing to dive into its hell once again for the sake of Prithian.
Let's go, she said.
Every moment we wasted here could spell someone's doom in that gleaming palace in the bay. Moore swallowed once and winnowed us into the palace. She must have visited a few times throughout the centuries because she knew where to arrive. The middle levels of Tarquin's palace had been communal space between the lower floors that the servants and lesser fairies were shoved into, and the shining residential quarters for the high fae above. When I had last seen the vast greeting hall, the light had been clear and white, flitting off the seashell-encrusted walls, dancing along the running rivers built into the floor. The sea beyond the towering windows had been turquoise, mottled with vibrant sapphire. Now that sea was choked with mighty ships and blood, the clear skies full of Illyrian warriors swooping down upon them in determined, unflinching lines. Thick metal shields glinted as the Illyrians dove and rose, emerging each time covered in blood. If they returned to the skies at all. But my task was here. This building. We scanned the floor, listening. Frantic murmurs echoed from the stairwells leading upward, along with heavy thudding.
They're barricading themselves into the upper levels, Moore observed as my brows narrowed,
leaving the lesser fae trapped below, with no aid.
Bastards, I breathed. The lesser fae didn't have as much magic between them, not in the way the high fae did.
This way, Moore said, jerking her chin toward the descending stairs. They're three levels down and climbing. 50 of them.
A ship's worth.
Chapter 36. The first and second kills were the hardest. I didn't waste physical strength on the cluster of five Highburn soldiers. High fae, not adder-like underlings,
forcing their way into a barricaded room full of terrified servants. No. Even as my body hesitated at the kills, my magic did not. The two soldiers nearest me had feeble shields. I tore through them with a sizzling wall of fire. Fire that then found its way down their throats and burned every inch of the way. And then sizzled through skin and tendon and bone, and severed the heads from their bodies. Morgis killed the soldier nearest her with good old-fashioned beheading. She whirled, the soldier's head still falling, and sliced off the head of one just nearing us. The fifth and final soldier stopped his assault on the battered door, looked between us with flat, hate-bright eyes.
"Do it, then,"
he said, his accent so like that of the Raven's. His thick sword rose, blood sliding down the groove of the fuller. Someone was sobbing in terror on the other side of that door. The soldier lunged for us, and Moore's blade flashed, but I struck first, an asp of pure water striking his face, stunning him, then shoving down his open mouth, his throat, up his nose, sealing off any air. He slumped to the ground, clawing at his neck as if he'd free a passage for the water now drowning him. We left him without looking back, the grunting of his choking soon turning to silence. Moore slid me a sidelong glance. "Remind me not to get on your bad side." I appreciated the attempt at humor, but laughter was foreign. It was only the breath in my heaving lungs and the roiling of magic through my veins and the clear, unyielding crispness of my vision, assessing all. We found 8 more in the midst of killing and hurting, a dormitory turned into Highburn's own sick pleasure hall. I didn't care to linger on what they did, and only marked it so that I knew how fast and easily to kill. The ones merely slaughtering died fast, the others. Moore and I lingered. Not much, but those deaths were slower. We left 2 of them alive, hurt and disarmed, but alive, for the surviving fairies to kill. I gave them 2 Illyrian knives to do it. The Highburn soldiers began screaming before we cleared the level. The hallway on the floor below was splattered in blood. The din was deafening. A 12 soldiers in the silver and blue armor of Tarquin's court battled against the bulk of Highburn force, holding the corridor. They were nearly pushed back to the stairs we'd just exited, steadily overwhelmed by the solid numbers against them, the Highburn soldiers stepping on the bodies of the fallen Summer Court warriors. Tarquin's soldiers were flagging, even as they kept swinging, kept fighting. The closest one beheld us, opened his mouth to order us to run, but then he noted the armor, the blood on us and our blades. "Don't be afraid," Moore said, as I stretched out a hand and darkness fell. Soldiers on both sides shouted, scrambling back, armor clanging. But I shifted my eyes, made them night-seeing, as I had done in that Illyrian forest when I had first drawn Highburn blood. Moore, I think, was born able to see in the darkness. We winnowed through the ebon-veiled corridor in short bursts. I could see their terror as I killed them, but they could not see me. Every time we appeared in front of Highburn soldiers, frantic in the impenetrable dark, their heads fell, one after another, winnow, slash, winnow, thump, until there were none left, only the mounds of their bodies, the puddles of their blood. I banished the darkness from the corridor, finding the Summer Court soldiers panting and gaping, at us, at what we had done in a matter of a minute. I didn't look too long at the carnage. Moore didn't either. Where else? Was all I asked. We cleared the palace to its lowest levels, then we took to the city streets, the steep hill leading down to the water rampant with Highburn soldiers. The morning sun rose higher, beating down on us, making our skin slick and swollen with sweat beneath our leathers. I stopped discerning the sweat on my palms from the blood coating it. I stopped being able to feel a great many things as we killed and killed, sometimes engaging in outright combat, sometimes with magic, sometimes earning our own bruises and small wounds. But the sun continued its arc across the sky, and the battle continued in the bay. The Illyrian lines battering the Hybern fleet from above, while Tarquin's armada pushed from behind. Slowly, we purged the streets of Hybern soldiers. All I knew was the sun baking the blood coating my skin, the coppery tang of it clinging to my nostrils. We had just cleared a narrow street, more striding through the felled Hybern soldiers to make sure any survivors stopped surviving. I leaned against a blood-bathed stone wall just outside the shattered front window of a clothier, watching Moore's quicksilver blade rise and fall in lightning-bright flashes. Beyond us, all around us, the screams of the dying were like the never-ending pealing of the city's warning bells. Water. I needed water, if only to wash the blood from my mouth. Not my own blood, but that of the soldiers we'd cut down. Blood that had sprayed into my mouth, up my nose, into my eyes, when we'd ended them. Moore reached the last of the dead, and terrified high fae and fairies finally poked their heads out of the doorways and windows flanking the cobblestone streets. No sign of Alice, her nephews or cousin, or anyone who looked like them, amongst the living or the fallen. A small blessing. We had to keep moving. There were more, so many more. As Moore began striding back to me, boots sloshing through puddles of blood, I reached a mental hand toward the bond, toward Rhys, toward anything that was solid and familiar. Wind and darkness answered me. I became only half aware of the narrow street, and the blood and the sun, as I peered down the bridge between us. Rhys! Nothing. I speared myself along it, stumbling blindly through that raging tempest of night and shadow. If the bond sometimes felt like a living band of light, it now had turned into a bridge of ice-kissed obsidian. And rising up on its other end, his mind. The walls, his shields, they had turned into a fortress. I laid a mental hand to the black adamant, my heart thundering. What was he facing? What was he seeing to have made his shield so impenetrable? I couldn't feel him on the other side. There was only the stone and the dark and the wind. Rhys! Moore had nearly reached me when his answer came. A crack in the shield, so swift that I did not have time to do anything more than lunge for it before it closed behind me, sealing me inside with him. The streets, the sun, the city vanished. There was only here, only him and the battle. Looking through Rhysand's eyes as I once had that day under the mountain, I felt the heat of the sun, the sweat and blood sliding down his face, slipping beneath the neck of his black Illyrian armor, smelled the brine of the sea and the tang of blood all around me, felt the exhaustion ripping at him, in his muscles and in his magic. Felt the Hybern warship shudder beneath him as he landed on its main deck, an Illyrian blade in each hand. 6 soldiers died instantly, their armor and bodies turning into red and silver mist. The others halted, realizing who'd landed amongst them in the heart of their fleet. Slowly Rhys surveyed the helmeted heads before him, counted the weapons. Not that it mattered. All of them would soon be crimson mist, or food for the beasts, circling the waters around the clashing armada. And then this ship would be splintered on the waves. Once he was done. It was not the common foot soldiers he'd sought out. Because where power should have been thrumming from him, obliterating them, it was a muffled rumble. Stifled. He'd tracked it here. That strange damper on his power, on the siphon's power, as if some sort of spell had turned his power oily in his grip, harder to wield. It was why the battle had gone on so long. The clean, precise blow he'd intended to land upon arriving, the single shot that would have saved so many lives, it had slipped from his grasp. So he'd hunted it down, that damper.
battled his way across Adriata to get to this ship. And now, exhaustion starting to rip at him, the armed soldiers around Rhysand parted,